Oh, that's right. We're right here, Sharp Fastest Gallery, this morning, and I have Congressman Mick Mulvaney on the air with us. Always enjoy talking to Mick. He's the he has the business sense, and he's fighting a battle up there in Washington, D.C. How you doing today, Mick Mulvaney?
And I'm cold. How are you?
Pretty cold, too. This is kind of unbelievable, isn't it? But you're not in Washington, and I understand that's worse.
No, I'm glad I'm not in Washington. There's always good reasons not to be in Washington. Today, there's an additional reason, which is they got about 10 inches of snow yesterday, but I'm in Columbia this morning.
So, that sounds good. What are you doing in Columbia?
Met with a group of folks last night on my way to Charleston this morning to meet with some folks down there regarding the lieutenant governor's race. Pat McKinney, my friend, is running for lieutenant governor. Going to meet with some folks, talk about the ports, then I'll be back in Columbia again tonight. So it's just, this is one of those vacation weeks that you hear about in the media where Congress doesn't work, and instead I spend 4 days driving around the state. So, good times.
Okay, I understand. I would like to ask you, what is going on with the port? Any word on when we're going to get this port, Charleston port, deepened?
Yeah, we've actually had a couple of really good developments for the port in the last couple of months. There was a small amount of money for the port in the omnibus appropriations bill that we passed last week. Again, not the deepening money, so it wasn't that big of a deal. But the big deal was really in the way that we were able to restructure the manner that the port will be deepened in the future. I actually worked real closely with the folks at the port to change the prioritization that the Army Corps of Engineers goes through on port projects so that if a port has a good chunk of local money available to it, it will go to the head of the class. The state legislature was smart enough to go ahead and set aside some state money for deepening the port, and that allowed us to sort of bump Charleston up the list. So with the state legislature putting together some money, with me being able to convince my friends in Washington to change the prioritization system, we actually think that we can start digging the Charleston port as many as 5 to 7 years earlier than we otherwise would have. So it's a huge success for South Carolina. The port obviously impacts jobs all over the state, so we're pretty excited about it. It's been a pretty good couple of months for the port.
Well, that is good news to hear, but we're still talking about 5 to 7 years, huh?
No, you're talking about 5 to 7 years earlier. So say that they can start deepening it in 2015 instead of 2020 or 2022.
Oh, that is good news.
That is good news. So I'm sorry to make that clear.
So. Exactly. Well, let me tell you, what did you think about the, what was your feeling about the budget deal?
Well, the two pieces to it. The budget deal, which was the Ryan-Murray compromise from back before Christmas, I didn't like very much. We had a choice between two levels of spending, a low level of spending and a higher level of spending, and I wanted desperately for us to stick to the lower level of spending, so I voted against the Ryan-Murray compromise back in December. Last week, what we had was an appropriations bill, a spending bill, that set down how we were going to spend that money. And I thought that was a pretty good bill. In fact, I voted for it. I think the majority of the delegation did. I know that Jeff and Mark didn't, and I respect that. There's a very close call. What it comes down to is there were a lot of bad things that were funded in that bill, and there were a lot of good things that were funded and bad things that got defunded. And that's very important as a fiscal conservative, a social conservative. If you have a chance, for example, to defund the Department of Homeland Security's ammunition buying programs until they tell us what they're doing with the bullets, if you have a chance to defund foreign aid to Libya, you have a chance to defund foreign aid to Afghanistan, those are good things to do. You have a chance, for example, to not allow the government to enforce the UN treaty on arms. These are good conservative principles. You have a chance to reinstitute a lot of the federal prohibitions on federal funding for abortion. Those are good things. There's also bad things that are funded. We're actually trying to get the list up on our website of the pros and the cons. But the bottom line, at the end of the day, and you and I have talked about debts and deficits, the spending, since I've been on the show now for about 3 years.
Yeah.
The spending level that we just approved last week is lower than in 2008. Barack Obama will have less money to spend than George Bush had in his final year in office. And that is something that fiscal conservatives should be glad for. And and it's a small victory, but it's something that we tried very hard to do when we all ran for office in 2010. We said we wanted to roll back spending to pre-stimulus levels. It's 2008 levels, and we actually succeeded in that. We have a lot of work left to do on mandatory spending, which is three-quarters of the budget. But this is a good success for us on the discretionary side.
Now, Mick, how are you working with Democrats now? Has there been any change in how things are coming together up there?
No. Not really. Again, because the major drivers of the debt and the deficit is obviously entitlement spending. And one of the frustrations I had with the Ryan-Murray agreement back in December was that it completely ignored entitlements. Democrats are not willing to engage with us on what's really driving the debt, which is Medicare, Medicaid, and to a lesser extent, Social Security. You have to fix those programs, not so that folks today get less money, but that my children don't have the same type of program that we have today. Unless you do that, these programs go bankrupt. And I do not understand why the Democrats simply stick their head in the sand and refuse to engage in a conversation on those topics. We can't even get them to agree, for example, that if you're 70 years old and you make $1 million, if you're still working at age 70 and you're making $1 million, that maybe you shouldn't get Social Security or Medicare. You don't need it. We can't even get them to agree on that, which is just absurd. So it's going to continue to be frustrating, I think, a tough fight here for the next several years until perhaps we get a different folks in the Senate, let alone in the White House.
Now, America, one of the things that President Obama has said is that he has a pen and the telephone, and if y'all don't cooperate in Congress there, he plans to just start signing executive orders.
Yeah, and that's disturbing. That language out of a president probably demeans the office a little bit. Certainly presidents have the right to do executive orders. All presidents do them. They are, generally speaking, they are completely acceptable use of the executive authority. Keep in mind, this is the chief executive officer of the executive branch of government. He's supposed to do things like prioritize what the FAA is going to do and prioritize what the Department of Homeland Security is supposed to do. That's what he does. Okay. Now, that said, going around Congress is wholly inappropriate. One of the steps we've been working on, and I got to give credit to my friend Tom Rice down in Myrtle Beach for doing this, is to figure out a way to sue the president. It's very difficult to sue the president. And Tom has got a thing called the STOP Act, STOP. You can do a Bing internet search on it. I don't use the words Google anymore. But if you do a good Bing search on that, you can find out what it is. Nice piece of legislation to try and say, look, when the president oversteps his bounds and deprives Congress of its authority, then Congress should have the right to sue the president. And I think that's one thing. That's one thing that we have to try and do. Because if a president is going to willingly and openly flout the Constitution, then we have to willingly and openly fight him on that.
Absolutely, that is. That I just couldn't believe it when he said it. Really.
Can you imagine Ronald Reagan saying that?
No.
Really? Can you imagine can you imagine even Bill Clinton saying that?
No.
Again, I'm sure many, many presidents, maybe all of them, have been frustrated with not being able to get their agenda through Congress. This is part of the system. It's designed to be difficult for any president to get his agenda through Congress. It's why we have a separation of powers and different branches of government. But to come out and say, you know what, I'm so frustrated that I'm just going to do what I want to anyway. They don't want to do what I want to do. I'm going to do it. This is a childlike type approach to the Constitution, and it demeans the office when he talks like that, and it certainly doesn't make it easier to work with my colleagues across the aisle.
Absolutely. I got one last question for you. Senator Tim Scott and the NAACP, you heard about what they said, I presume?
I did, yes.
What do you think of it?
Let me say one thing about my friend Tim Scott. One of the classiest human beings I think that I know. And I think his response was effectively that he's going to, let other people make those types of mistakes, and he's going to try and live the principles that Dr. King taught to folks of all races, and he was going to let folks like that gentleman in North Carolina show what Dr. King was fighting against. Maybe one of the classiest things I've ever heard Tim say. This is a true gentleman. He's a real honor to the state of South Carolina. Listen, I'm just glad that the whole country, because of this awful thing that this guy said in North Carolina, if the net result of that is that the country gets to see what a great guy Jim Scott is, then it'll be a net benefit for us and for him and for all of us who want to try and raise the level of discussion about race and about all issues in this country. So I take my hat off to Jim Scott. I'm proud that he's a friend of mine.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I understand you're on a short time frame here today. I sure appreciate you calling us today, Congressman Mick Mulvaney.
And thanks. Take care. Talk to you soon.
All righty. Bye-bye.